Ladies and gentlemen, if we can take a seat, we're about to begin. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Brad White. I'm the Director of Media Relations for ICANN. Thank you, first of all, for coming to our opening news conference for our meeting here in Cartagena. Our two speakers, Rod Beckstrom, our CEO, President, Peter Dengate Thrush, our Chairman of the Board. I believe they have some brief opening statements which they're going to make, and then we'll get right to your questions. I want to let you know that we have three ways of questions, reporter questions, coming in today. Besides the reporters in the room, we have a telephone bridge where we have reporters from around the world who are online monitoring the news conference and may have some questions. For those reporters who are listening to my voice, you have to hit #3 to be able to ask a question. And for the online reporters who are joining us, you can type your question, as some already have, in the chat section of the screen, which was in the media advisory that you all have received. With that, gentlemen, do you have an opening statement?
Yeah. Thank you, Brad. Thanks for the work that goes into setting these up, and thank you for those of you who are attending, both here physically in Cartagena and online. Just the usual excitement at the beginning of an ICANN week. We just had a tremendous opening ceremony, and thanks again to the Minister and his team for putting that together, and to .co for their support. A very detailed presentation from the Minister as he launched this Viva Digital for Colombia, which is tremendously exciting for the community here. And thank you, Rod, also a very good speech detailing all of the things that's going on at ICANN. Just to pick up on a point that we often make about the multi-stakeholder model and how important everyone's voice is, voices of dissent, of collaboration in different languages, etc., that's the key to ICANN. We really have to have that input from everybody. Obviously, we need to work harder to do more outreach, better online participation, more translation, more simultaneous interpretation, but we are working on that because we think that participation is so important. We're getting a lot of excitement here because we're getting close to the launch of the new GTLD program, and as I said this morning, that's something that we actually started 10 years ago, but it goes back even earlier to the green paper and the white paper 14 years ago when ICANN was first being developed, that there had to be a process for the enlargement of the GTLD space. So as I said, we started in 2000 with round one, and then we did some more in 2004. And now 6 years later, having learned lessons from those experiences, we're close to finalising an even larger expansion. And what's really important about that is what a proof it is of the multi-stakeholder model in terms of the people who've participated in that. We've got a lot of effort going into that from the existing registries and registrars, for example. And alongside them are all those people who want to be registries and registrars. There's a huge amount of potential, new business, running those new businesses all over the world. We've had submissions and input from all sorts of other groups, ISOC, that tends to represent the user community, ALAC, our own branch, our own organisation that represents the users, have made a huge amount of input. The IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force, has been crucial in developing the IDN aspect. A lot of the new GTLDs will be IDNs. They'll be in different scripts, and the expansion rate there is really exciting. And, of course, we've had a lot of input from governments. The governments have been giving us very detailed advice about the public policy aspects of the new GTLD program right from the beginning. One of the earliest detailed contributions to the process was the GAC principles on new GTLDs. And, of course, recently we've been spending a lot of money and Rod might be able to give us the number. It's actually an extraordinary amount of money on professional advice, particularly in the area of economic studies, as we've tried to help model the domain name market, which goes back to a request that the board made in 2006 to make sure we were understanding this market as well as we could as we start making these dramatic changes to it. So I guess that's enough of an introduction from me. Brad, happy to go to the or to Rod, and then we'll go to some questions.
Thank you very much, Peter, for your eloquent remarks. And thank you, all of you, for joining us here in Cartagena and for everyone covering the press conference remotely. Over the last several ICANN public meetings, We have worked on enhancing remote participation for many of the public sessions, and today is another step as we have worked consciously to enhance remote participation of this press section today. And that's an attempt to continue to reach out globally to include all parties, whether or not they can travel to the public meetings. So those of you that are on this call remotely, thank you very much for joining. This meeting, ICANN 39, is another demonstration, as Chairman Dengate Thrush mentioned, in demonstrating the power of the multi-stakeholder model, with so many people from all over the world contributing very concretely to our policy processes. We face a wide range of issues at ICANN 39. Among them, new GTLDs will be considered by the board. It's potentially a change of historic proportions for ICANN and the domain name system. And almost a decade of work has gone into this, and our goal has always been on one thing, getting it right, and this takes time. We're grateful for the extensive public comment that we've received over the years on this issue, and a wide range of views, many of them very strongly held, have contributed to the process. Over 1,000 comments have been received on the new GTLD program already. So we can't and we will not predict what the board will do on this issue this week. That's to be the determination of the board. Thank you for joining, and we are happy to take questions.
We would ask that as you ask your question, if you would please identify yourself by name and also news organization. Let's start with the room. Questions from the room.
Here.
Hi, Karen McCarthy here from the GIBC. Peter, in your speech this morning, you said you were referring to the Hitchhiker's Guide, and the most useful element of it on the front was don't panic. You've got a lot of issues this week which, you know, other people would panic over. To my mind, there's a letter from the U.S. government which was asking you not to approve the applicant guidebook this meeting and suggesting that you had broken the affirmation of commitments. There's the issue about .xxx, which may or may not come up. There's the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, which has reviewed a key element of the affirmation, and they've come up with various recommendations. There's the relationship that you share with the GAC, which is obviously crucial, particularly with the IANA contract that ICANN relies on coming up next year. And there was a letter from the Olympic Committee threatening to sue ICANN if ICANN didn't provide it with special exemptions for dot Olympiada, et cetera, in the GTLD process. So with all those listed, my question broadly is how much of those do you expect to be able to resolve this meeting? How much of them do you expect to resolve at all?
Well, thanks, Kieran. The don't panic message was really lighthearted. Let's be clear about that. This is a fairly typical caseload, in fact, for an ICANN meeting. Every time we come together, these meetings, there's a great concentration of taking advantage of the fact that the global community is meeting to discuss internet issues, and so a great long list is usually put together. And this meeting is not really that much different. I don't know whether you want me to work through all of those. It may take a while, but we'll deal with all of those in our way. We're considering how to respond to the letter from the Department of Commerce, as Rod said in his speech. What we are very pleased about is that this is a very clean, open communication through the public comment system. There have been times when perhaps communications from governments haven't been quite so visible. The entire community has been able to see that and judge that, and we've had a lot of feedback as a result of that. So that we're working through that. XXX, yes, that was a major contention for a long time. We seem to be working through that without much of the sort of hysteria that seemed to surround some of the earlier applications. We would get letters from all sorts of people about that. That seems to be being taken much more calmly these days. You mentioned the Accountability and Review Team, which we, of course, are very pleased to have. This is a very important process from ICANN's perspective. Last year, we ended the reporting relationship we had with the US government, and we've changed to a relationship where we report now and are accountable to the entire community. And this is that community coming in and auditing us in relation to our accountability and transparency, and reporting back to the community on what its findings are, and then making recommendations to the board. So far, from what the board has seen of the report and the public comment that's come in, we're very encouraged. A very diligent job has been done by the community independently to audit ICANN's accountability and transparency, and has made what seem at this stage to be a set of implementable and useful recommendations. I can't speak for how the board will respond, but that seems to be the general community reaction. Relations with the GAC are good. We've been working on a joint board GAC working group to improve collaboration, and there are elements of the ATRT report that will help us improve that. ICANN is absolutely dependent on strong support from the governments of the world. The GAC is the place that they come to provide that support. The membership of the GAC is growing. We now have all of the G8 governments of the G8 countries are members of the GAC. And our contributions from them are very worthwhile, and perhaps Rod might like to detail a bit later on a very supportive letter we've recently received, for example, from the Chinese government, and I know you've been working with the Russian government on a number of fronts. So the relationships with governments in general and the GAC in particular are moving in a very positive sort of trajectory. Yep, the IANA contract's coming up for review. We've got plans in place, and we've started preparation for that. So the answer is, the last one you mentioned, I think, Kieran, was a communication from the Olympic Association. I think, again, what we need to do is sit with them at some stage and just explain what a lot of time and effort we've put into building protection for trademark owners in the new GTLD program. Once they understand, I think, all of the protections that are available for brand holders in that program, we hope they will be as satisfied as most other brand holders are with the IP protection. Remember that when we started the process, one of the fundamental principles of the new GTLD program was not to infringe the rights of others. And so we've worked very hard in building that program to try and make sure that those sorts of rights are. So, in getting in first, you managed to get in quite a lot of questions there, Kieran, but let's see if there's anyone else has one.
I should also note that we do have consecutive Spanish translation. It is not simultaneous, but for those of you in the room who speak Spanish, feel free to ask a question, and we will translate. Can you say that in Spanish?
Queremos hacerles notar también que contamos con interpretación en modalidad consecutiva para todos los hispanoparlantes que deseen formular una pregunta en su idioma materno. Siéntanse libres de hacerlo, que será interpretada.
Gentlemen, we've got a question from Doogie Standiford in Europe, European correspondent for Warren Communication News, who is asking both of you, is the economy likely to placate NTIA given that, as Kurt noted, it leaves a lot open with regard to predicting net benefits from GTLDs?
The difficulty with, as everyone said, about prediction is that nobody knows what's going to happen in the future. So economists aren't any better at predicting the future than anyone else. Remember what the origin of this whole focus on economic studies actually was. It came from the board asking for economic studies to allow us to understand the market better. We wanted to know issues such as price substitutability, whether we were talking about whether the domain name was one market or whether it was a whole series of independent markets, etc. And we've got a lot of very useful information out of that. I think the focus that some people keep putting on the ability of economists to be able to predict whether this is going to be a commercial success or an economic success completely misidentifies the purpose and the ability of the economists to actually help. Do you want that? Are we going to wait and have that translated for Spanish or not? I'm happy.
No.
Okay.
We'll handle that later. We will give the answers full Spanish translation so people will have access to it.
Is Doogie online? Is that?
Yes, Doogie is online. She's on the internet, and she just typed out her question.
Rod, do you want to add some more about the economic studies?
Sure. Clearly, they're important. Following on the affirmation of commitments. We hired some respected economists that were actually recommended by NTIA. They've performed two studies, and we've spent almost $1 million on those studies seeking to answer these questions that are very difficult because it's a well-known issue in the field of economics that it is extremely difficult to value or estimate the potential value of innovation. I mean, even as we saw testimony to this morning, with the unexpected, I'd say dramatic successes of the .rf Cyrillic domain in Russia, with over 600,000 registrations already, and also the extremely rapid success of .co here in Colombia, or .co. You know, the beautiful thing about innovation and about creativity and technology is that you usually can't predict, you know, where the great successes are going to be and where the great value is going to be added to consumers. So that will forever perhaps remain a question, and it's not just doesn't just pertain to our specific field of domain names. It's a very broad economic enigma that it is very difficult to value innovation. I mean, imagine if you were an economist hired 10 years ago to put a value upon the idea of letting people create a little page with a photo of themselves and a description of their age and their interests, and to share that with some friends. What would the value of that innovation be? Well, I'm not sure any economist would be able to predict that. Well, the value today is certainly north of supposedly Facebook alone is worth $35 billion, and there's MySpace and other ventures in that area. Well, it's a pure innovation that I don't think anyone could have properly estimated or foreseen only 8 or 10 years ago. So the same is true across many areas of technology and internet. So we look forward to continued discussions on this topic, but there will be no end of economic studies in any field. But I think that these studies do provide some contribution to the discussion and clearly the analysis of the board.
And just to add to that, Rod, I think what I thought was interesting today also about those statistics from the Russian Federation is that they're all domestic, which puts paid to this myth that there's going to be a flood of defensive registrations for trademark protection in all of these new top-level domains. Almost all of those Russian Cyrillic ones are just simply local people wanting to get onto the internet using a Cyrillic domain name.
That's right. The operator shared with me, Peter, that 97% of the registrations are domestic. 97%. So that's a pretty amazing figure, showing the demand inside other countries for their own language script and for new instances of TLDs, in this case, the .rf TLD.
We've got another online question, but before we take that, another question from the room.
Tenemos muchas preguntas, pero antes de tomar preguntas remotas, ¿hay alguien en la sala que tenga alguna pregunta? Sí.
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es César Sabogal, de la Agencia Francesa de Prensa. Quiero preguntarle, esta reunión de Cartagena se da en medio de un escándalo mundial frente al tema de WikiLeaks. Quería saber si su posición o su postura con respecto a este tema, hoy que se habla también del tema de seguridad en la red.
It's a very simple answer to the question on WikiLeaks, if I may, and that is that we have no involvement. We're a global coordinator for the root zone of the Internet and for policies, the domain name system. We have neither the authority nor the technical capacity or operational capacity to take down domain names. That is an issue that's left to governments who can make those decisions and who can issue instructions, legal instructions, to registries or registrars. So we had nothing to do with this instance. We had no special knowledge of it.
Rod, by way of follow-up to your answer on that, we have a question from Europe here from an independent journalist who says, have you been, picking up on what you just said, have you been actually asked to take a position against it, against the takedown, by A, a government or governments, or B, from those who might think ICANN should prevent registries from taking down sites for national law reasons?
We've had no request from any government. There's always chatter in the community about what policies, you know, should be or where they could go in the future with respect to what the other parties do, registries and registrars. We've had no communication with any governments on this issue.
Another question from the room.
Tenemos otra pregunta en la sala.
Kevin.
Hi, I'm Kevin Murphy. I'm freelance. Question for Rod on the Department of Commerce letter. Your recent statements about it seem to suggest that your taking the letter as just one of many community inputs rather than as a result of the special relationship that you have with the U.S. government. So I was wondering if you could provide a bit more clarity there.
Sure. As we expressed in the speech this morning, we were very appreciative of the fact, and as Peter even mentioned early in the remarks in this press conference, very appreciative of the Department of Commerce submitting their comments and their thoughts openly and transparently. And those were posted by the Department of Commerce under the new GTLD program, public comments. And that is an appropriate place for any party to post their comments. And so we appreciate their doing that. And obviously, along with other inputs that we receive, we will duly consider it. And again, we appreciate the fashion in which it was handled. I don't know, Peter, if you want to contribute any thoughts.
Well, I suppose just to point out that the independent review of our performance under the accountability and transparency, under the affirmation of commitments in relation to probably the most important element of the AOC is the accountability and transparency conceptually. And that report is about to come out. So I think that's something that we'll look forward to as a partial support for that. The other thing that was related, so we're sort of trying to unravel exactly what the letter, we're considering our position and how to respond to that at the moment. And part of what we're doing is sort of teasing out the different parts of the letter, some of which seem to relate to affirmation issues and some of which seem to relate to the new GTLDs, and then they're sort of linked. So we're just working through that.
Peter, there's a follow-up question, and this goes directly to you. Follow-up from Doogie. Will there definitely one way or another be a vote on new GTLDs this week?
Well, I'm not sure how the board is going to deal with that. We've said in public we are concerned about allowing sufficient time for parties to consider things like the economic report. That's reasonably new information that's come in relatively recently in the process. The public comment period closes on the same day as the board vote. We are being updated daily as a board by very good efforts from staff. And it's up to the board, really, whether it feels that it's had sufficient time and whether the community's had sufficient time to digest all the material up to that date. I'm pretty sure we could make a substantial number of positive votes about aspects of the process. The crucial one that the community's waiting for, of course, is the start date. And I'm not quite sure where the board will be on that at this stage.
Questions from the room?
Hay otra pregunta en la sala.
Kieran?
Getting back to the letter from the U.S. government, there were several clear assertions in it, which I wondered if either of you would be willing to respond to. One is the U.S. government said they felt it would be unrealistic for you to approve the guidebook. And the second was it listed three issues that it felt were unrealistic. And it said that it felt that you had breached the affirmation when it listed the three. You know what the three are, I won't go into them. My question is, do you feel it would be unrealistic? And do you feel that you have breached the affirmation of commitments?
First is, I don't believe the word breach appears in the letter, but perhaps we can read that again, and it certainly I don't believe has been interpreted as such on our side. Obviously there were some strongly held opinions there, and there's obviously different stakeholders that have very strongly held opinions about this program, both for and against, and I think that the ICANN board does its utmost to balance the different views on complex policy issues and come to decisions. We look forward to that continued dialogue, and we also look forward to the finalization of the ATRT review on our accountability and transparency.
Sorry, could I be allowed a quick follow-up on that? Is that the difference between, as we all know, the difference between the U.S. government saying, we feel that you are not following up the affirmation of commitments, is the core document for ICANN. That is where you are getting a lot of your legitimacy from. That is the only agreement that you have which is with regard to ICANN and what it needs to do. So when one of the signing parties says, we feel you have broken it, Are you able to say, well, we don't feel that we have, or are you able to say, we will look at whether we have?
Again, I don't believe the word broken appears in the letter. And I think that it's feedback that we'll consider and we'll either respond to directly or respond to more broadly as a part of the input provided on the new GTLD program. But thank you.
I'd like to just push back on the concept that we derive our legitimacy from a single document with a single government. I mean, I think that's completely untrue. ICANN derives its legitimacy from doing its job and from doing its job properly. One of our jobs, of course, is running the IANA function, which is crucial to internet operations. We've got written confirmation from most of the consumers, if you like, of that service that say they are very happy with the way ICANN is running that service. That's where we get our legitimacy from the CCTLD managers, from the GTLD registries and registrars, from all the people that come to ICANN. And you look at that, look at the ceremony this morning. It's all those people who voted to come to this meeting and participate in this week of policy debate. That's what gives ICANN its legitimacy. We can terminate, either party can terminate the AOC agreement with the United States very, 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 very easily. Not at all suggesting that we would, but it's got to get its importance in context. It's a very powerful document because what ICANN does is declare to the world, not to the United States government, those commitments are to the community, that we will operate openly and transparently, that we will perform in a particular way, and that we will, you know, carry out those commitments. That's the power of the document, but it's not a method of conferring legitimacy on it. What gives us our legitimacy is the way we live up to those commitments.
We have a question about IPv6. Basically, ICANN has made no secret that it would like to advocate wide expansion of IPv6. Economics seem to be a factor in the expansion of IPv6. Would you both address that?
Sure. First, the many of the members, the way addresses are allocated is the ICANN IANA function has a allocation process of working with the regional internet registries in 5 regions around the world. Those regional internet registries are the ones that then allocate the IPv addresses to technology firms or other partners and other network operators, very often ISPs in the regions. Those members pay fairly de minimis annual fees to be members of those organizations, and we can get quotes for what those would be here in LACNIC or in different regions. Once they're a member, they have a right to request internet addresses based upon need. Clearly, parties that have any need for IPv6 that can demonstrate that are members of those RARs, will receive an allocation of IPv6. That cost is very low. I mean, far below 1 penny per address, because the blocks of these addresses come in the trillions, and the annual fees to the RARs are quite low. The primary economic cost, and I'm not an expert on the network operations topics, but to my understanding, has to do with network reconfiguration and software work and a different software and human-related costs, and in some cases, upgrading equipment. But there can be some costs there. It really depends on the network. A lot of the networking gear which has been sold in the last number of years is fully capable of supporting IPv6. So anyway, it depends on the network, depends on the circumstances. And I think that'd be really a good question to direct to the ISP constituency here in ICANN or some other group that specializes in that area. One thing I can say that we have heard is that if you're building out a new network, it's cheaper to go implement IPv6 initially than it is to go implement IPv4 and then to have to come back and change it to IPv6. Because then you make an initial investment in configuration, and then you have to go back and reconfigure again. So that's an old saw that I'm told is if you're building a significant new network, start with IPv6 in the first place. But again, that depends on the individual operators and what they deem best.
And I'd just like to throw a little challenge as part of that. I mean, who knew when mobile phones were brought in that texting was going to be available? Who knew that we would go with that with Twitter? With every new technology, as Rod said, there's some slightly additional costs in installing IPv6, but you're getting a different product. So the challenge now is for those technical entrepreneurs to find ways of using the additional facilities that you get with an IPv6 address, which is much larger than an IPv4. What new features might be hidden out there waiting for entrepreneurs to come and develop?
Question from the room.
Hay una pregunta en la sala.
Karen. Oh, I'm sorry, Finn. Go ahead.
Just Finn O'Reilly, managing IP. Just going back to the economic study, why wasn't it posted for public comment?
Sorry, I understand that it has been posted for public comment. Yeah, a couple of days ago.
We'll check into the exact deals on details on that, but if it's not already posted for public comment, I believe it's likely to be shortly. Certainly has been posted for public review.
Peter, we have a question, online question for you from Monica Emmert in Europe. One more question. Can ICANN realistically afford to postpone GTLD start when so much of the ICANN community is behind this in lieu of the U.S. government's request for more time?
Hi, Monica. Thanks for the question. I'm not sure where this word realistic is now starting to appear. It appears in the letter and it appears in the question. What's real for us is making sure that we get it right. There's not an issue in getting it done quickly. And as we've proved, I think, in the years that have been spent in doing the policy development and then now several years of implementation and all those parties that I mentioned and all that work that's gone into it, we want to get it right. And if we have to take a little bit longer to do that, I'm sure if that's how the board feels, and I'm not speaking on behalf of the board, then we will take the appropriate amount of time to get that right. We understand in doing that that there's an enormous pent-up frustration in the commercial community that's been waiting to unleash its creativity, its entrepreneurial energy in this new area. But on the other hand, there's the legitimate concerns of incumbents and others for whom any change is going to be upsetting to their markets and their positions. So it's a continuing balancing exercise. I would just say to you, Monica, at the end, look, go forward 3 years and look back at all this process, and and if you can convince the board that 1 or 2 months more time now to get something right is crucial, then that'll be very powerful advocacy. But I don't think the board is going to be swayed too much by some of the passion that's around. We'll take a careful decision and try and get it right.
Sorry, Kieran McCarthy again. Yeah, on a completely different subject. So, Rod, in your speech this morning, you spoke, made a personal appeal to Hamadon Touré, the Secretary General of the ITU, recognizing that their recent plenipot, they had specifically and in several documents said that they were interested in, I forget the exact words, but improving relationships with ICANN and various other internet organizations. And you specifically referenced that and said you were hoping to work more with the ITU and with Hamadon Touré. Can I ask what specific plans you have, and could you foresee an equivalent of an affirmation of commitments with the ITU in the near future? Or do you have any plans or any planned meetings with Mr. Touré or ICANN staff and ITU staff? Is there progress with that relationship?
I hope that we can post your question as public commentary on our overall international strategy and relations. I mean, that's a new idea. It's an interesting idea that certainly never occurred to me. I think that what we were sharing is our appreciation for Hamadon Touré's actions in Guadalajara, and actually the entire ITU group that approved a resolution which I believe was the first in ITU history that recognizes ICANN by name and our existence as an institution and as another player in the ecosystem. So we appreciate that step, and we have many different touch points with the ITU. The ITU has a seat on our nominations committee. The ITU has a seat on our governmental advisory committee. And the ITU, on a rotating basis, also has a board liaison seat on our ICANN board of directors. And so I think we can wish to continue to see continued open dialogue and progress in our relationships. And I was simply expressing my personal as well as our institutional gratitude to Hamadon Touré and the ITU. Thank you.
Question in the room? We have one online, gentlemen. Quite honestly, was the letter from NTIA a surprise to ICANN?
The answer is no, it was not a surprise. We get a variety of correspondence about all sorts of issues. As Kieran mentioned, we get letters threatening lawsuits if we don't do something. We get letters threatening lawsuits if we do something. So we get a range of passionate communications from a number of players. As I say, we're in reasonably good communications with the Department of Commerce.
Mr. Beckstrom, proliferation of DNSSEC seems to have gone more slowly than anyone would like, including ICANN. Why?
That doesn't correspond with our own impressions. I think we're extremely pleased. I mean, to have 50 DNS signed top-level domains into the root already in less than 6 months, I think is pretty phenomenal. It's pretty excellent progress. There is some real technical work that has to be done by the registries to implement that technology, and it's important work that needs to be done with care for the security and stability of the Internet itself, and we're very encouraged by the progress. And as we mentioned this morning, we've been informed by VeriSign that they intend to sign the top-level domain for .NET this week. .org has already signed, or PIR has already signed the .org zone. And .com has been announced for March. Those three alone are roughly well over 100 million domain. It's the TLDs that exist over more than half the second-level domains in the world, which certainly means, and plus the 50 that have been signed, there's plenty of opportunities for the second-level parties to sign their zone once those pieces are in place. So we're actually encouraged by the progress. Thank you for the question.
We have one more question from Monica. Why has the ICANN board chosen to deregulate cross-ownership?
Well, for a number of reasons that are partly set out in the resolution that we passed when we made that decision, and more of the board's thinking is going to be included in other minutes, etc. From that, the reasons are largely that there is no observable or provable justification for creating separation. The reason we got to separation is historic. It related largely to the monopoly that existed in relation to .com and really had very little application in relation to other TLDs without the market power of .com. So the more we analysed that, again took legal and commercial advice, listened to the community debate, the eventual conclusion was that this was an artificial constricting device that was not really appropriate for general application to all new TLDs. And what's interesting, I think, since that decision is there's been no criticism that I have seen of the decision itself. I haven't seen anybody come forward and attempt to try and argue that that was the wrong decision. All of the focus seems to have been on the way the board made the decision, because we have had to step in after with some reluctance because of the inability of the community itself to do that. There was just too much vested interest, too difficult for the parties currently in the GNSO to break the deadlock themselves about how to do that. And that seems to be the more interesting topic of discussion, is the fact that the board, after asking the GNSO to develop a policy and then giving them time to do it, then had to step in and do it. So I guess we're reasonably pleased that the decision itself seems to be reasonably well accepted by the community.
Hello, yes, Kieran McCarthy. I've asked a few questions, so I apologize. On .xxx, you specifically resolved to ask the GAC to come back to you because you wanted it to provide greater clarity on what its views were on .xxx, and you specifically stated in the resolution that you wanted those to conclude for this meeting. Is the implication that if the GAC does not say we do not want .xxx, that therefore you will have a vote on it? Is that the correct timeline?
Well, we haven't actually asked the GAC that question, and I'm not sure the GAC's going to come back with a view saying we don't want XXX. The questions we've gone back to the GAC about relate to the advice that they gave in a number of publications and occasions in the past. Some of them were questions. Some of them came from individual members of the GAC rather than the GAC itself. So we've gone back to just clarify what exactly is the GAC. What exactly did the GAC mean back in the Wellington communique of 2006 when it said this and so forth. So the reason what we wanted to try and achieve by Cartagena was to clarify that advice, and then under the bylaws, if we think we are about to do something, or if in fact we do something and don't follow GAC advice, we're obliged in good faith to try and negotiate or mediate a resolution of the difference between what the board wants to do and what the GAC has advised. So it was trying to go through that process as quickly as possible, clarifying their position, seeing what kind of mediation might be achieved. It's not any attempt to rush the .XXX decision. It's to try and get the party's position clear in relation to advice.
So the second part of the question was, so if the GAC gets back to you and says, we don't believe you are breaking our advice if you approved on XXX, will you then feel that you should have a vote due to the process that's been going on for a while?
Yes, as soon as we can bring that project to a conclusion, we will. And at this stage, what seems to be the only major issue to be resolved is exactly what the GAC advice was and is in relation to that. Once that's sorted, then we'll be able to put that to a normal vote.
We have a follow-up to your comments on DNSSEC. Is the .ARPA signing solved?
I don't have specific... our vice president of our ANA group is nodding her head that yes. So I'm happy to say the .ARPA signing issue is solved.
We've got one more question online, but anybody in the room before we take that?
Tenemos una pregunta online, pero antes de recibirla, ¿hay alguien que quiera hacer una pregunta en la sala?
Is the very existence of, or expansion of the new GTLDs at risk because of the U.S. government letter?
Sorry, I didn't hear that. Could you repeat?
Is the very future... Is the acceptance, regardless of when, of new GDLDs at risk because of the U.S. government letter?
No, it's not at risk because of the government letter. The government letter is one more factor that we will be taking into account very carefully, as we do with all public comment in relation to that particular project.
Any other questions?
¿Hay alguna otra pregunta?
Again, let me say to the people online who've been deafeningly silent, unlike any reporter I've ever met, if you want to hit #3, you can ask a question. We're getting no indication on our machines here that you have any questions. If we don't have any other questions in the room, we have nothing else online, then we'll wrap it up a little bit early. So one final call for questions. Very good. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
I would also like to mention to our Spanish speakers, and please translate for me, we will have a full Spanish translation of the news conference done as soon as our translation team can get to it. Also, for people online or any of you who are here, the press room is room 144 downstairs. We're here to help you during your week covering the conference. If we can be of any assistance whatsoever, please contact us. Thanks.
Por último, quisiera decir para todos los hispanoparlantes que han estado presentes y quienes nos han estado siguiendo online en forma remota, que estará disponible la traducción al español de todo lo que se ha dicho aquí en la conferencia de prensa en cuanto al equipo de traducción.